Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
This is Dropkick Murphys kicking off the third hour of Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. With a tune that I never particularly liked before, You'll Never Walk Alone, simply because it's so sappy. It's got a great message. Leave it to the Dropkick Murphys to turn it into something that I love and that, I think ought to be like a parade marching tune for certain people of a political stripe. So, Kristen Lyerly, remember that the next time you're marching in a parade with a group, that would make a good song. It's also what... If Kirk Bankstead would ever come back from vacation, I picked that song just for him as well. And it's going to be his and our theme every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, that You'll Never Walk Alone. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be here with you guys. And, you know, as much as I love being here alone with the two of you, I do miss Kirk.
Oh, don't worry. That tornado will come raging again real soon. So I just hope he's enjoying the time off. It certainly looks that way. We were going to be joined by Dr. Ben Weston from the Medical College of Wisconsin with an update on COVID. Unfortunately, he's under the weather. He also makes clear it's not COVID, because that would be ironic, but that he basically has a very sore throat. And so talking at us will be something that we will schedule for another time. And Kristen will talk about, the status update of COVID in Wisconsin in just a little bit, but we have to cover some other business first, which requires my saying in the most honest and sincere terms possible, Kristen, how could you forget it was the first day of school for your kids? How does a parent forget the first day of school?
Well, not really like forget, but you know, it kind of, we're living our lives and we're having a great time. And I don't know.
I saw you put up a post that said you were shopping for school supplies on the first day of school. And then you were talking about your weekend plans. And that's when it became apparent you weren't sure when school started. And boom, here it is.
We're just living our lives, Pat. You know, I have boys. So all I have home right now, I have four sons and I've got my 13 and 16 year old home with me, and they're not planners. So they woke up in the morning and said, "Hey, Mom, today's back to school. I get to meet my teacher." And I said, "Great, we should probably go out and buy you some new shoes and maybe some notebooks today." We had a
Do you know what a great experiment that would have been if they would have figured out that you didn't know, and to see how many days they could milk that without having to go to school until you said, "Isn't it the first day of school?" And they'd go, "No, Mom, no. What are you talking about? It's not yet."
I knew. It's on the calendar. It's just that the dissonance between the things that are on the calendar and the things that you're planning in real life. Like, you know, the camping trip I planned for Labor Day weekend, where I thought, hey, we'll leave early Friday morning and then we'll have a full Friday day, not remembering that they're going to be in school on Friday.
Yeah, there's something that gets in the way of that early Friday departure.
I did have that moment where I thought, do they have to go to school? Because we're going to be camping. Like, what's the priority here?
I talked to my two older grandsons, 16 and 8, and got the first day of school photos from them. And I really wish we would have had this conversation yesterday before I talked to them last night, because they would have loved the prospect of letting their mom, my daughter, you know, think that there was something wrong with the calendar. I mean, just Ferris Bueller on a grand scale, not just one day off, but how much more can you extend summer vacation?
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how we run things around here. But, you know, it's working for us, so we're just not going to change anything right now.
I grew up in an area where it was always the day after Labor Day, which to me now kind of strikes me as unfair, because Labor Day is supposed to be a holiday. But it was what it was. You always knew that morning after Labor Day, you were getting on that school bus. So for me, anytime I hear about pre-Labor Day starts, it strikes me as a little odd. To me, I would adjust the school day in whatever way you have to, so that the first day of school is the day after Labor Day. The last day of school is heading into Memorial Day weekend. You always know it. That's the bookend, and work it out in between there and make the days, you know, longer or shorter as need be. So how's that for, I feel like I've, I've outed myself as some kind of weirdo, but I
that happened a long time ago.
It makes sense to me. I don't know why it can't work. Yeah. Kristen Lyerly is with us, and when I let her get a word in edgewise, we're going to talk about the status of the COVID pandemic in Wisconsin, a little bit more about things that have been in the news this week. But I do want to hit on one story that broke this morning, and we get this courtesy of the great J.R. Ross at Wispolitics, who says, a federal judge has issued an injunction guaranteeing disabled Wisconsin voters the option to receive help from a third party in mailing or delivering their absentee ballots. The judge gave the Wisconsin Elections Commission until September 9th to issue guidance to clerks reflecting that order. And this is not something that's going to be a big burden on the Elections Commission. When they said right now the voter is the one required to mail the ballot, that was basically following the spirit of the law when the right-wing justices on the state Supreme Court got rid of drop boxes. It had the consequence of eliminating that help for disabled voters. So, Kristen, I know we only have a couple seconds here, but it seems like at least one positive development in the works for voting.
I just can't believe that we are in a situation where we have to have a judge getting involved. Like, what is the world coming to when we don't want disabled folks to be able to use their voices?
Well, again, we are the only advanced democracy where one political class is actively making it harder to vote. You see that nowhere else in the world. We'll talk more about headlines and more with Kristen Lyerly next year up north.
Oh, back to school. To prove to Dad that I'm not a fool. I got my lunch packed up, my boots tied tight. I hope I don't get in a fight. Oh, back to school.
All right, well, here we are on the cusp of the school year. At least now Kristen Lyerly is aware of that. So
baby steps.
It comes with a song and everything. Welcome back. It's Up North News. Brewers lost to Pittsburgh. They play them again this afternoon at 1:10, and then they hit the road for Arizona and then Colorado, and a gorgeous couple of days ahead before a chance of rain on Friday. Before the break, we were talking a bit about how a federal judge has stated the obvious, that that disabled voters should be allowed to have some assistance in order to cast a ballot. But that is the nature of what we're dealing with this particular election cycle. We spoke in our first hour with Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about all of the many threats that there are to voting, the barriers that are put up in front of people. And Kristen, I think now with the Gableman investigation ended and with disabled voters being, you know, allowed to have assistance, maybe we're not going to have any more legal wrangling between now and election day, and we can just get back to campaigning on the issues. Maybe.
Wouldn't that be great if we actually campaigned on the issues? Mm-hmm. That's what people want, but we are so tied up in this partisan wrangling that we can't even get to the issues. We don't even know what the issues are.
Well,
and we don't even know how to express how to hold our legislators accountable when they are not responding to the issues and addressing the problems.
Well, I have one way that I'm going to share with you now. Our former congressman up north, Sean Duffy, was on Fox and Friends a couple of weeks back and was asked about all of the classified and top secret information that former President Trump took away from the White House down to his Florida home. He's not allowed to do that. It's not a thing. These are highly sensitive documents that were packed up in boxes and hauled away. And on Fox, former Congressman Sean Duffy said in so many words, he didn't think the president, actually knew. Yeah, so it was kind of calling the president, dumb or ignorant. This is somebody else doing it. But he did put in a loophole of how Duffy accountable, and let's listen to what he said.
Packing boxes out of the White House to move them to Mar-a-Lago. Do you think that he went through the boxes in Mar-a-Lago? Do you think he knows what he had in those boxes? I don't think he did. And so to come after Donald Trump criminally, I think is going to be very challenging for the Department of Justice, because I don't think he packed them. I don't think he knew what was in them. There was a negotiation about those boxes, but Donald Trump didn't look through them. Donald Trump didn't pack them. And so criminally, I don't think there's going to be any liability here, or very challenging for the Department of Justice, unless he had top secret information in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago and they found that, maybe, but more than likely it's in boxes down in some locker room in Mar-a-Lago and it'll go nowhere.
Well, it didn't go nowhere. In fact, a Department of Justice report. Sorry, that was Sean Duffy stepping on a rake, a la Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons. Yeah, there were documents in a desk and in boxes that were commingled with other papers. And Kristen, if we're going to get back to the issues, like you said, if we have to have some commonality, we have to at least have the commonality that you don't keep top secret information that might contain information that gets other people killed just lying around in boxes at your golf course. I would think we could finally start to agree on that.
When did all of this crazy stuff become normal to us in the world? You know, like, wouldn't you love to be sitting in that room where you're just taking in all of these bizarre things that are happening and you're coming up with the response to feed Sean Duffy his talking points so that he can say the things that he says on his entertainment network that's not actually a news network? Because they say the way that they spin this stuff is so out of touch with reality, but they do it. I mean, it is just a constant feed of just ridiculous words.
Well, when you talk about not being connected to reality, in fact, that reminds me that former Kenosha County executive Jim Cruiser recently penned an editorial in the Kenosha News and is really starting to take issue with people like Tim Michaels and Senator Ron Johnson politicizing the tragedy that took place in Kenosha 2 years ago after a police shooting and the civil unrest that occurred in its wake. And we have seen nonstop in Republican ads the images of of things on fire without any even hint at of proposing a solution. And so Jim Cruiser wrote that he had to speak up because Michaels is continually saying that that Governor Tony Evers dragged his feet on calling out the National Guard when every bit of the record suggests otherwise. And Cruiser wanted to make sure that people knew that. And he made sure to say in his op-ed piece, Jim Cruiser, that the claims that Donald Trump was making about Evers and Kenosha were essentially detached from reality. Mm-hmm. So again, you see that again, where we have to make it okay to use the word lie. Trump mm-hmm. is lying about these things, and people need to stop believing these lies, or it's going to get people hurt.
It's so true. The National Guard isn't just sitting there waiting to be activated at a hair trigger. I mean, it takes time to pull these people together. It takes time to come up with a response. And what's happening with the Republicans in Kenosha right now is really just perpetuating this division and making the problem worse. And the people who are suffering are the people in Kenosha. So they need to back off and let Kenosha heal. And exactly what you just said, Pat, start solving problems.
Well, I don't expect that's going to change from Tim Michaels anytime soon. And I have said a couple of times here on the program that I expected, since Michaels has flip-flopped on a few things recently.
Yeah.
I said that I expect him to flip-flop of sorts on the issue of abortion, and that he would try to moderate his stance as other Republicans around the country have been trying to do. But now I'm starting to think he may just, stick to his guns on this in light of a new report in the Milwaukee Journal this morning from Corinne Hess, who notes that Michaels and his wife have donated about $250,000 in 2020 alone to anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQ groups. Mm-hmm. The Timothy and Barbara Michaels Family Foundation funded organizations that oppose all forms of contraception and abortion in all cases. And they spend thousands on churches that spread anti-LGBTQ beliefs and rhetoric. So I guess since he's already there, he's going to stay there and really just own the right wing and hope that somehow he's able to scare enough people with Kenosha imagery and others to squeak out a win.
Yeah, he does own it. And, you know, specifically when it comes to abortion, he has clearly supported these organizations that want no exception for abortion, not even for the life of the mother.
Yeah, no rape, no incest exemption. And yeah, it would limit birth control and prohibit in vitro fertilization. Kristen, mm-hmm, as an OBGYN, what would that mean to have a ban on in vitro fertilization?
I mean, all of it is just preposterous. You know, I just can't, I don't even have the words to express the frustration that I feel, Pat, because all I want to do is take care of my patients. So when someone comes to me and they have a problem, whether it's infertility or bleeding or whatever, I want to talk through it with them and give them up-to-date evidence-based information so that they can make the best decision within the context of their own lives. We know that, and to take that to a different realm, politically, we know that in vitro fertilization, we know that not having exceptions for rape, not having exceptions for incest, not having exceptions for the life of the mother when it comes to abortion, those things don't play well politically with most people in this country. So I don't know how Tim Michaels is going to spin this, because he obviously has been very committed to these really radical organizations that hurt people, literally kill people, tear families apart, harm communities. I mean, Tim Michaels couldn't be more wrong on this. So I hope he sticks to his guns, because
but there's more. The Michaels Foundation has donated to Christ Fellowship in Miami. This is a church that gained notoriety in 2015 when one of its most famous parishioners, Marco Rubio, announced his bid for the presidency, and the megachurch's leaders' anti-trans and anti-gay comments were discovered. There also were donations to a church in Pewaukee and one in Brookfield. In one, the pastor suggested that people who have an abortion are in need of forgiveness, and that allowing transgender children to use the bathroom of their choice is awful. And so Michaels has said during the campaign that Democrats are too concerned with social issues to stand up for Wisconsin residents. And I've hit this before, but I'm going to hit it again. It's not that Democrats are bringing up social issues on their own. It's that Democrats and progressives are calling out hate like this, mm-hmm, that are calling out discriminatory behavior like this, and have their own economic plans for the economy, for workers, for farmers, for small businesses. But it doesn't mean you're supposed to be quiet when you see injustices like this.
It's just unbelievable. But I think one of the things that we can always count on Tim Michaels to do is say something awkward or flip-flop. He just doesn't have that charm and that smooth approach that I think a lot of people get sucked into. So as a politician, my hope is that people will recognize that Tony Evers is the real deal. He is the person who people want to be in charge, who people feel like they can trust, and that Tim Michaels is a flip-flopper from Connecticut who doesn't actually care about the people of Wisconsin.
But now comes my note of caution. We have seen this before in Wisconsin, only a couple of years back, when it looked like there was no chance that Brian Hagedorn was going to win election to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And thinking that it was going to put the final nail in the coffin, a group released reports on Hagedorn's support for a private school that was also anti-LGBTQ. A lot of people, myself included, said, well, he didn't have a chance to begin with. Now he's done. And Hagedorn won, shocking everybody. Mm-hmm. But not shocking all of the evangelical voters who heard that and had the complete opposite reaction, that our boy is being persecuted and we've got to turn out. And a lot of people got complacent in that state Supreme Court race. They stayed home, and we end up with, right now, there could be a progressive majority on the state Supreme Court, and there is not. Now, there could be one next April. There's another election. But all this time, we've had that because people hear these things about a candidate and, you know, they think it's bad for them. But you and I both know that news like this today is also going to motivate some Wisconsin voters.
And if they can get to the polls, they will vote. So we need to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to get to the polls, cast their vote, use their voice, and make sure that we turn this thing around.
Now, when we advertised the show, we said that Dr. Ben Weston was going to join us with a Wisconsin COVID update. He is under the weather. We'll see if he can join us another time. But after this break, Kristen and I will talk a bit, and she'll give us an update on some pandemic-related developments here in Wisconsin. Right after this, you're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
We're caught in a trap. Before we get into Suspicious Minds, this is the real information part of the show with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we're going to talk just a bit about the pandemic in Wisconsin. Kristen, I don't know if you heard this, there's still a pandemic out there.
There is. You know, 500 people a day are dying in the United States of COVID. 500 people a day are still dying every day in the United States because we are still in a pandemic.
I you know, you raise an interesting point that I used to have bookmarked the state dashboard, some of the local dashboards, the Johns Hopkins dashboard every day, and we'd update the newsletter, and people were very concerned, and it's so funny how we've compartmentalized it. So I'm pulling it up right now just to see what it shows here. Yeah. Total deaths worldwide coming up on 6.5 million. I ended up pulling up the global one instead of the US one. Here comes the US one, because everybody remembers when it hit a million, but we haven't really talked since. Of course, that bookmark isn't going to work the way that it used to. But I mean, again, north of a million, still 500 a day.
Yeah. Five a day in Wisconsin on average. I mean, that's still a lot of death. And our testing seems to show that we had a peak in early August here in Wisconsin, but it's trending downward now. But testing isn't a great indicator right now because a lot of people are doing home tests that don't get reported to the public health department. So it's really hard to know where we're trending. And a lot of the data that we're getting right now comes from wastewater investigation.
Well, tell us about how that works. I remember it was so intriguing that wastewater would be an indicator.
Yeah, as much as I would love to be able to give details on that, I'm going to have to defer to Dr. Weston when he comes back on the show, because it's complicated. All I can really say is that they look at wastewater samples from different municipalities to determine what kind of viruses and bacteria are found there. So what was it, 2 weeks ago, they found polio in New York City. This is an early indicator of just some of the things that are floating around and what we have to watch out for in the future. So I think it's really, really smart testing. But again, I'm not an expert in this area. But what I do know is that there's a new vaccine coming out.
That's where I was going to go next. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's focused on the Omicron variants. It was really initially developed for BA1, but that is primarily gone now. So it's BA4 and BA5 that we're looking at. Everything's evolving so quickly. And the trick is to get the right variant into the right vaccine, make sure it's safe, and then get it out to the public. We've been doing this for years with the influenza vaccine, trying to predict what the next thing is coming down the pike so that we could offer the right type of vaccine, the right subvariant. Sometimes we're great at it, and sometimes we're not. But COVID has given us some new tools, including the mRNA vaccines that are really easy to use, to develop, and to test. So this new vaccine that's coming out will probably be available as early as next week. And the Pfizer version will be available for people 12 and older. The Moderna version will be available for people 18 and older. And anyone who has gotten that initial regimen, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, they can all get this booster as long as it's been at least 2 months since your last shot.
So again, your own family physician is most likely your best first call. And if you don't have a regular family physician, what's people's best option?
Oh yeah. Health department. I mean, Google it. If you search Wisconsin and COVID, you'll end up on the Wisconsin Health Department website. And there are lots of locations where you can get your vaccine. I mean, you almost can't not. Most local pharmacies carry them. These boosters will also be free. So that is another barrier removed. But I think it's really important because we've heard so much about vaccines in the past couple of years. Only 60% of Wisconsinites have completed the initial vaccine regimen. So 40% of Wisconsinites are out there unvaccinated. And only half of those people, about 35%, have gotten a booster. There's so much room for improvement, so much room for us to go in and truly protect ourselves, especially as winter is coming and we'll be in enclosed spaces, gathering with more potential for this to spread in the months to come.
And now I have the figures in front of me on the correct screen. And in Wisconsin alone, there have been, we just passed the 15,000 death mark. 15,063 people in Wisconsin have died from this. In the last 28 days, 121 deaths. Mm-hmm. So this is still a very real. There have been 46,000 cases in the last 28 days. And by the way, that national death toll, 1,044,915. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember when 44,915 deaths was treated like a national tragedy. Mm-hmm. Now we're at 1,044,915. And the complacency is unfortunate. And I think it's really, I don't think you can help us all enough understand the importance of the boosters or getting that vaccine regimen the first time.
Right. We estimate that a quarter of these deaths could have been prevented if people had gotten vaccinated. And I think it's also important to consider that these are deaths that we're talking about, but that doesn't take into consideration the time that people are out of work, the impact that it has on their families, on their jobs, on their communities, and people who are still struggling with long COVID, neurological symptoms, other physical symptoms, having problems breathing a year or longer after you've had that initial infection. So this is not, the death toll is one number, but it doesn't begin to reflect the impact that COVID has had and continues to have on all of us.
There's one other thing I want to talk to you about at the intersection of health and politics. And it's just so dumb, but it's got to be said anyway. In Pennsylvania, the Senate race is between TV's Dr. Oz mm-hmm. and Democrat John Fetterman. And Fetterman is still recovering from a stroke, but mm-hmm. he is recovering. And in the jockeying back and forth about, you know, whether they will debate and how they will debate, what the Dr. Oz campaign put out in terms of not debate conditions, but debate concessions, where they basically mocked him and said, well, if we have a debate, we will allow him to take, you know, bathroom breaks whenever he wants, and he can have an earpiece so that the answers can be fed to him, and a host of other things that were just so below any sort of human decency to mock somebody's medical condition as you're preparing for a debate. I mean, you deal with people whose recovery is tough enough without having to deal with, you know, public mockery of it.
Right, especially from a physician. Are you kidding me? This is ridiculous. And this Senate race is very similar to our Senate race here in Wisconsin between Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes. It is a hot, contested, exciting, sexy Senate race. And Dr. Oz is going to pull out all the stops to try to uncover any sort of a weakness he can reveal. So I find it just as a physician, I saw your lack of words as you were trying to describe this. It's shameful. It really is shameful. This is the U.S. Senate that we're talking about. This is not some entertainment television show. I mean, these people are making decisions that affect the rest of our lives. I'm just really disappointed.
Yeah. Look, we all should be. We should be better than that. And I think one of the main things that has stumped us is whether the right word is shameful or shameless. Mm-hmm. because shameless makes it sound like they're beyond help. There's no recovery. And I almost don't want to use that word because I want to be the optimist and call it shameful that maybe at some point the people saying things like these, like this will feel a sense of shame and actually, you know, turn things around, or at least maybe voters will stop believing so much of it.
I don't think it's going to change his behavior. You know better, Pat. But
I do.
It's the voters. I mean, I think you can have faith in the voters. And I find that when I talk to people and I approach it from an I'm your neighbor kind of person or kind of angle, I feel that we share so many common values. And I know that I say this over and over again, but people are tired of this partisanship, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or independents or nothing. They're just tired of it. But they know that they've got lots of problems that need to be solved. And the solutions to those problems are rooted in our common values. And our leaders are not working for us.
Let me switch gears, somewhat related to the pandemic, but it's people who are returning to working from the office rather than working from home. And I'm afraid I don't have the number in front of me, but you know, there was, of course, a huge spike in people that were working from home. It went from something like 5% to 60%. And now it's back down, but it's back down to 30%, something like that, which is still six times as much as it was before. We've joked before about how you as an OBGYN can't really engage in nearly as much, you know, telemedicine as other specialties. But all joking aside, as a physician, what are the changes that you've seen in the way that that any health professionals are talking to their patients? How, again, things have come down off the pandemic, but I don't think we're going all the way back to the way things were prior to it when it comes to things like telemedicine and other remote forms of healthcare.
No way. No, this is a game changer. I got this vision of like talking somebody through a telemedicine birth, like, nope, to your left and push a little harder. You
scooch a little closer to the camera there. No, no, that's not medicine. That's porn. So
I was, it's definitely not porn. If you've ever seen a birth, but I was talking with one of my friends yesterday, who's in her 80s. And we were talking about when you go to the doctor, how much of what you do is actually a physical exam and how much is it just talking? And I think that is where the opportunity is for telemedicine, because if you can schedule that appointment, you know, it's going to be 15 minutes and it's going to start at 10 and it's going to be over at 10:15, and you're going to have that your healthcare professional right there in your screen talking to you and listening to you. And you don't have to take a half day off of work or a whole day off of work. You can just take that 15-minute break and get your doctor visit scheduled then. And if you do need a visit, you can make that happen too. But I think this is where we really have to reinvent how we think about medicine and what our expectations are from our healthcare providers.
It's true. I will admit, now I have a wonderful family physician. And I mean, when I visit with her and I you know, hear her talking to me about these things, you know, answering questions or whatnot, I think I just get a different vibe because I'm right in there with the room in the room. But you know, it does. I think she would probably still be as effective a messenger even if it were through a screen. But I suppose it's going to be different for every patient. That some patients and some doctors will adapt well, and others just really need that in-person appointment, even if you are just talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be like a sudden change to all telemedicine. And there are certainly going to be visits where you need face-to-face. And I love that face-to-face with my patients. I love to be able to just, you know, like put my hand on her shoulder and give her a hug when she needs it, because we talk about so much really tough stuff. But I think that there are ways that we can do things better, and we have to open ourselves up to think about how can we serve each other in a more effective, appropriate way.
Kristen Lyerly joins us, as always, this hour on Wednesdays. And in this case, it's a Wednesday heading into Labor Day weekend. And I believe you've mentioned before here that you've got a trip that's coming up that follows in the footsteps of Gaylord Nelson. Is that right?
My kids think I'm so nerdy, but I just love Gaylord Nelson. Gaylord Nelson, our former U.S. Senator, father of Earth Day. is from this little tiny town in northwestern Wisconsin called Clear Lake. And it is small. It's kind of up in your neck of the woods.
It is. And that was a very near part of my old Senate district. And so I have a story to tell about this for something. I want you to be on the lookout for something while you are on your trip over the Labor Day weekend. So,
oh, I can't wait. Is it on the way to a brewery? Because I'm definitely going to find it then.
It's Wisconsin. Of course it's on its way to a brewery. We'll be back after this. You're up north. How did we get on the topic of disco during one of the commercial breaks? Oh, we were talking about coming out of a tumultuous time. And for a lot of us, that was 1968 in terms of, you know, what is in our memory most recently, in the country's history, I should say. And, you know, we came out of 1968 eventually, but I mean, there were a lot of people thinking the world was coming to an end, given how tumultuous it was. And we did recover, but as I was noting to Kristen, we recovered and then we got disco out of it. So was it really a full recovery? And then you went and confessed to what a Donna Summer fan you are.
I love disco.
So we, again, the antithesis of yacht rock, we're really at both ends of the 70s musical spectrum. So you and I are to 70s music what Luke and I are to zucchini. And I don't know if you heard, but earlier in the morning, I surprised him with a bit of a zucchini expert.
No.
Yes.
No, I don't want to see.
Yeah. So true. Kristen is on a Labor Day weekend getaway to Clear Lake, the home of Gaylord Nelson. And so Grandpa has a story. When Grandpa was in the state Senate, it was the 2009 budget cycle, and you know the recession, the Great Recession, was in full swing, and so it was made real clear that unlike 2007, the amount of earmarks were and other budget requests were going to be few and far between, and that if you were going to ask for something in the state budget bill, it better cost pretty close to $0. So I had something put in that normally would have dollars attached to it, but it didn't then. And I honestly don't know if it ever did in the years afterwards, because Republicans have controlled the legislature ever since. What I put in the budget was a simple little provision that designated, I believe it's Highway 63, mm-hmm. going, you know, through Clear Lake and up toward, you know, the Ashland Bayfield area, declaring that the Gaylord Nelson Highway. Mm-hmm. But we put $0 in for signage. And the thinking was that we go through this budget cycle, you know, maybe there's more state funds at that point, and then eventually you budget the funds and you have those signs put up. So we see signs everywhere about, you know, memorial highways for this person or that group. And I have to admit, I don't think that ultimately anybody came back to it after I'd left the legislature to put up the signs. So when you get out there, I'd be curious to see if there's any signage indicating that you're on the Gaylord Nelson Memorial Highway. Because if not, then that is something a dozen years overdue to have that signage up. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's there, but take a look for me.
I will absolutely take a look. It says it on Google Maps. So when I look at the highway, it definitely says it there. But
okay,
I
so it has the designation. We did legally mm-hmm. designate it. I just don't know that we ever allocated money for the sign. Well, I mean, we didn't. I don't know if anybody ever eventually did.
But, you know, don't you think, this is just me thinking big because I like to do this. So climate change is the number one issue for younger generations. And I think of my kids. This is the thing that they worry about. And Gaylord Nelson is the father of Earth Day, which is the thing that got us thinking about climate change at first. Like, this was the thing that kicked it off. So isn't there an opportunity for us to recognize this beautiful part of Wisconsin, which is absolutely stunning? It's the thing that motivated Gaylord Nelson to think about the earth and conservation and all of this beautiful all of these resources that we have here in this state, and to recognize that and preserve them and use them in an effective way. Can't we do something great? Isn't it time, Pat? Isn't it time?
It's past time, especially on a road that takes you up toward the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, which Gaylord Nelson played a role in, in helping show that to President John F. Kennedy and eventually getting that designation for that area as well. So, I mean, we've talked about in the 60s, the awareness that eventually led to the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, things passed by Republicans in Congress as well as Democrats and championed by Richard Nixon, a Republican president.
Yes.
And yet, From Reagan onward, that entire focus was lost. It was now big business and profit. And we talked earlier about how Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is actively fighting the efforts to identify and remedy areas that are contaminated with industrial PFAS chemicals. And I hope your point is right. I hope that the younger voters out there are willing to turn out more so than previous generations, and that this concern about the climate and concern about natural resources helps drive that.
I think we've got a really strong population of folks up in Ashland, Bayfield, Washburn, who really care. And that's not so far away from Clear Lake. So I think, and when you look at some of the indigenous folks up there who are fighting for their lands to make sure that they're not contaminated by irresponsible big business and oil, there is a way to do this. And this generation that's coming forward, they're gonna have the torch. They are going to be the people who really fight for it.
So I know that you're an avid bicyclist. So is this mostly a biking trip?
There will be some biking. Okay. There's also a brewery in Clear Lake that's only open in the summer, only on Sundays between 12 and 7, Sawmill. It's called Sawmill. And they apparently have fantastic pizza. So that is one of the goals. So we're just going to explore the area, appreciate what Gaylord Nelson saw, and, you know, just bring some of that into ourselves internally so that we can share it with the rest of the world.
But what is this I hear that you... As campers, you have a pop-up that doesn't really pop up, because it's a pop-up. Doesn't that indicate something instant?
It pops up. It pops up, but I forgot to put new tires on it for like 10 years. So we had a blowout, and that blew out a bunch of the trailer. So then I've spent the last couple of weeks like figuring out exactly what it means to own a pop-up, which is a lot of clever maintenance. But on the upside, I've learned a lot about myself and camping. And I think we're going to have a really enjoyable time.
Well, can you take any of that mechanical skill that you've learned? Can you apply it to toilets?
No.
Because I've had a 3-week long repair job on this toilet here. So
no.
We're both learning things from our misadventures. And one of the things I'm learning.
I don't want to hear about the misadventures on your toilet, Pat. This is not okay.
Hey, we did an entire segment on the spud nut that's underneath the tank. So I'm hoping at this point somebody has heard my pleas and is showing up with the proper size pipe wrench for this thing so I can finally remove my spud nut.
What did your pleas sound like? Your spud nut pleas.
Look, it's like I told Luke, if I have to buy this expensive wrench, I'm going up and down the street asking everybody, can I remove your spud nut? And if I'm not here next week, you will understand why.
Oh,
have
boy.
Have a great time. Have safe travels. Can't wait to hear about it next week with the return of Kirk Bangstad as well.
Thank you, and good luck with your spud nut.
Thank you. God go with me. It's been great having you all here. Have a wonderful day. We will do this again on Thursday. We'll see you then. Have a great day.